Monster Man, special episode, Daemons, or Demons. Daemons. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity of Patreon backer Noah. And Noah has asked me to talk about demons with an A. That's D-A-E-M-O-N-S. We've discussed some of these creatures. They appear in the Fiend Folio in the form of the Metzodemon, and in a longer section in Monster Manual 2. So here's what Noah had to say about these monsters. How about the difference between demons and demons, like the Nicodemon, Metzodemon, etc., as it first began in AD&D First Edition through today? I was always curious about this distinction when I was young, when the first demons appeared as new monsters in Vault of the Drow and then turned up in the Fiend Folio. And now today, looking at my daughter's 5th edition monster manual, it seems to my surprise that demons have turned into something called Yuggoloths. Anyway, I find all of this intriguing. And he goes on to say, I should add that when demons first appeared in D&D, I was also not sure whether demon was pronounced differently from demon, with no A. I kind of thought they were pronounced the same, but then how could you tell them apart in speech? These were some of the many questions and thoughts that swirled in my head at age 10. If you'd like to be like Noah and request your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And in addition to your special episode, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, and additional bonus content that I release for all my Patreon subscribers. I want to start with the history of demons with an A in Dungeons & Dragons, and then we'll talk about the term and why it's so confusing, how it went from that to Yuggoloth in later editions, what role these creatures play in a game, and what we can do with them. So as Noah mentioned, the first appearance of the Metzodemon is in Vault of the Drow, and there I think they may have been added just to kind of provide more variety of demon-y monsters. I don't know to what extent the role of demons with an A in the planar cosmology was already sorted out. Indeed, because there isn't that much mention of it in the Fiend Folio. Now, they are in the Fiend Folio very much as one of the kind of update monsters. The Fiend Folio contains sort of British monsters and then a lot of monsters that had previously appeared in other publications, like the Kuotoa, or the expanded section on the Drow. They then received a great deal more elaboration in Monster Manual 2, and this, I think, is part of a general trend that we can see when we look at Monster Manual 2, which is the expansion of kind of roles in the planar cosmology as the system of planes, which was, for AD&D First anyway, outlined in detail in Deities and Demigods, all 30 of the planes, right? As that system of planes became developed, it needed to be populated. Also, I think there was maybe a perceived demand, or even a real demand, for more extraplanar monsters. So is it true that as the game matured, as, you know, campaigns were going on longer and longer, there was this sense of escalation, and maybe people wanted to venture outside of their home planes more often? I don't know. But in Monster Manual 2, we get a full breakdown of the position that demons with an A hold within the planar structure. The fact that that isn't in Fiend Folio tells us, again, a little something about the complicated genesis of Fiend Folio, because, of course, Fiend Folio actually does come out after Deities and Demigods, but it was meant to come out before. And we know that Fiend Folio was originally slated for release in, like, 1979, and then didn't come out until 1981. So what these guys do is they fill the gap between demons with no A and devils. As you may recall, demons with no A are chaotic evil, and devils are lawful evil. And so demons with an A fill the space in the middle. They are neutral evil, and they occupy the neutral planes of Hades, and on the other two sides, Tartarus and Gehenna. There are 17 alignment planes, 9 for the 9 sort of core alignments, and then an additional 8 that kind of make up the spaces between them. I think that's right. So, like, there's one between lawful evil and neutral evil, and one between neutral evil and chaotic evil, and so forth. And then at the center of them all is the true neutral plane, the plane of concord and opposition. And this is interesting in a way because these creatures are a combination of two things that we see in D&D. You know, early on in AD&D, what we see in the monster manuals is an adaptation of monsters from other sources, whether those are from folklore, mythology, fiction, whether they're real-world animals or whatever. plus some kind of new inventions like beholders, bullets, rust monsters, owlbears, and so forth. When you get to the Fiend Folio, we start to see secondary monsters. That is, monsters that are a response to things that already exist. And the most obvious example will be something like the Adherer, which only makes sense if your players already know what a mummy is and what to do with it. In a way, the demons with an A are response monsters. They answer a question that the existing material raises, which is, well, if demons with no A are chaotic and devils are lawful, then who's neutral? And so this category is made up. But then they do adapt creatures from mythology, well, creature from mythology anyway, Charon, the ferryman of the underworld, to answer that question. All right, let's talk vocabulary quickly. In ancient Greek thought, daimon, D-A-I-M-O-N, means pretty much spirit. And that can mean a spirit in the sense of, like, you know, an incorporeal being that emanates from or is commanded by a god or that inhabits a particular place. It can be a spirit almost in the sense of a soul that a person can have a daimon. You know, when a person is venerated after their death, it is their daimon that is being venerated. It can mean a spirit almost kind of in a metaphorical sense, like the whole community was gripped with the spirit of reform. It comes to mean demon in the way that we understand it when the Septuagint is created. And this is a Greek translation of the Old Testament. When this was being written for the Greek-speaking Jewish community of Hellenistic Alexandria, the translators needed to translate Malek, who are the messengers of God, and so they chose the Greek word angelos, messenger, angel, and they needed a word for the shedim, or sort of evil spirits, and they chose the word daimon. And so from there, it came on to have this specific meaning of evil spirits, that there was a different word for good spirits, and this eventually evolved into demon as we know it. People often say daemon, and I don't think there's any support for that, but what do I know? I'm not a linguist. But I would say that in ordinary spoken English, it is just pronounced demon, with the AE sound being E, like encyclopedia or archaeology. This is, of course, a problem because, as Noah has pointed out, it sounds exactly like the other kind of demon. And so that, I think, is one of the reasons that it was changed in AD&D's second edition and ongoing to Yuggoloth. Now, I don't think it's the only reason, because regular demons and devils also had their names changed, right? AD&D's second edition is the age of the Batizu and the Tanari and the Yuggoloths. Whether that was a direct response to the satanic panic, or whether it was a response to, like, a desire for trademarkable names, I don't know. I'm sure somebody could tell you. But what is interesting, I think, is that when, maybe in late second even, or certainly in third, the change was reversed, when they went back to the names demons and devils, they did not revert the demons with an A from Yuggoloths, presumably because they recognized that having the names be so similar was a source of confusion. And I don't know what happened to the poor old Demodans. So much for the meta origin, the out-of-character origin of these monsters. What do we do with them in-game? The later additions to the Lower Planes canon kind of struggle to compete with the original ones. I mean, even Monster Manual 2 expands the devils genuinely really interestingly, introduces this sense of them being involved in a kind of, like, backbiting politico-strategic competition. Maybe this comes from a scenario, I don't know. But it's a really fun take on what a lawful evil society would look like. It's intrigue-ridden, status-jockeying hierarchy. Really fascinating. And, of course, demons are, you know, the rowdy boys of the underworld, and they get to do all kinds of fun stuff as well. And so demons with an A are kind of left somewhere in the middle, and they're not as exciting. Neutrality takes a little more work to make compelling motivation for a villain. Now, if you look at later write-ups of the Yuggoloths, they focus on the idea that neutrality is a selfish alignment, right? That someone who is neutral considers the question of law or chaos not based on their neutral on the law chaos axis, that is, they consider something not based on whether it aligns with a specific principle of freedom or order, but whether it is personally short-term advantageous to them. Which is fine, but it's hard to imagine an extreme version of that viewpoint, because it's a very not extreme view. So I guess the idea is that these are creatures that are extremely greedy and selfish. The 5th edition portrayal of Yuggoloths, and I can only assume that this draws on what they were like in editions after the first, is that they are amoral mercenaries. They're evil, you know, but you can hire them to do acts of evil. They'll kill or curse or whatever the people that you want, but they're going to get paid. And it speculates, in fact, that they may have been created by, or at the behest of, Asmodeus. The Asmodeus wanted some troops or agents who would not have the connection to the Nine Hells, you know, maybe who weren't lawful, who could act independently of him, essentially deniable assets. And surprise, surprise, they were so not directly connected to him that they wound up going off and inhabiting their own plane. So this fits with the idea that they're sort of mercenaries, that they're for hire. And that goes back to the notion of selfishness. They don't have a cause. Their only cause is themselves. And so therefore, they wind up being in the middle of the ideologically motivated blood war between the forces of the Nine Hells and the forces of the Abyss. Okay, that's probably something. We can maybe go somewhere with that. The thing is that in a lot of the individual demons within A, this desire for wealth is reduced to the status of basically being a mugger. You know, the Corona demons who might take you where you need to go within the planar system or might betray you. There are lots of other creatures that just kind of lurk around the glooms of Hades waiting for people to pass by so that they can pounce on them and take their stuff. And that's, again, there's almost a sense of anticlimax about that, isn't there? Immortal supernatural evil that just hangs around waiting to jack people for their gold pieces. I think that there is something to be said for this general idea of kind of sadness that permeates the demons with an A. Let me go on a sidetrack with this for a moment. Perhaps this is all meant to represent the ultimate futility of this kind of selfish behavior. I'll take two examples, two of the kind of named characters. First, let's talk about Charon, the ferryman. So Charon is, his role in the game is essentially that he functions as a taxi service. And that's a neutrality in a nutshell, right? You want to get from one part of the planar cosmos to another. Well, here's a guy who can do it for a very steep price. But the steep price, I almost don't understand, right? What is he spending it on? It's not like he's going to go buy a jaunty hat with it. He only wears the one nasty robe. And this is kind of all he does. So he must be sort of Scrooge hoarding his wealth, because he's, you know, what is he going shopping in Hades and Gehenna to buy nice stuff to like put in his house? I don't know. Maybe if we go and visit Charon's lair, there's going to be like a big TV and he's going to have a real nice car. If we were to say that these creatures are motivated by selfishness in the way that devils are motivated by law, that is, that devils follow the iron law of hell, which is not a law that makes any kind of sense, right? They believe in law, not in justice, not in fairness. You know, they believe in law in the way that it tyrannizes and oppresses, not the way that it protects. We may say the same thing for wealth or for, you know, self-interest for the demons with an A, right? That they steal and they hoard wealth and they amass learning. That's another thing that we'll see. But less in the way that it enriches themselves and more in the way that it deprives and diminishes others, right? The selfishness of the miser who wants to get as much gold as possible, but not for the good things that gold can bring. He doesn't want luxury or comfort. He doesn't want to achieve some goal that's going to be very expensive for him to achieve. He just wants gold. That's a selfish and self-defeating view of the world, and I think that's a good neutral evil position to take. Right, I'm going to enrich myself. I could be the richest person in the world still trying to enrich myself. My life will get absolutely no better if I am richer than I already am. But that's just what I do. So maybe this is an indictment of the pointlessness of selfish behavior. You can maybe see this when you look at the top demon with an A, Anthraxis. Anthraxis represents another metaphor, I think, of neutral evil, in that he represents the image of disease. Disease and death are themes that kind of come up in a number of the monsters in this section, and it sort of makes sense. Disease is a great metaphor for truly neutral evil. Another of the terms that they use is absolute evil. It harms and kills, it inflicts suffering and fear and grief, but not according to any principle, just because it does. You didn't do anything to deserve this, but I'm also not singling you out for maximum disruption. It just is what it is. These creatures are going to come to the prime material plane and they're going to leave grieving spouses and orphan children. They're going to lie and cheat and steal and kill, and not because they're fighting for some cause, but just because that's what they do. And they're not happy. back in the regular episode when I talked about Anthraxis, I raised this point as well, but I'll just return to it briefly. Anthraxis is a wretch. So let's compare Anthraxis with his two opposite numbers over on the chaotic and lawful evil sides. Over on the chaotic sides, we've got the leader of the demons, Demogorgon. Demogorgon is a monstrous freak, a giant creature with two baboon heads and lashing tentacle arms, a hideous mutation with a frightening appearance. Over on the other side, we've got Asmodeus, who is basically the devil. He's everything you would expect from the devil. He's got the, you know, the widow's peak and the goatee beard, and if he doesn't have two little discreet horns, he ought to. Demogorgon has maybe not dignity, but majesty. He's terrifying. And Asmodeus has dignity. He's a man of wealth and taste. But Anthraxis is a wretch. He doesn't look happy or powerful or proud. He's got a rotting sheep head, and he wears a tattered gray outfit, and he looks as unhappy to see you as you are to see him. And again, I think that's maybe a commentary on the self-defeating nature of evil. You can sort of see the same thing with the lawful devils, right? Where Asmodeus has managed to achieve all this power, but all that means is that he's got to constantly watch his back lest he be betrayed by Mephistopheles, because he's a conniving, backstabbing, type A, take-no-prisoners creep, and so is everyone who works for him. You know, Anthraxis is just kind of like, I said he's going to do all this evil and it's not going to be personal, but perhaps we could almost say that this is just his lot. He sees no reason to subscribe to a greater ideology. He sees no reason to have sympathy or compassion. Who has those things for him? So I think that disease, like selfishness, can be a good way to indicate absolute evil, right? Where these people are being harmed and they're not even being harmed for anything. Neutral evil, in its extreme form, is that self-interested evil that does not, in fact, advance the self's interests. Another image that recurs throughout the depiction of the demons with an A is the idea that they're quite sort of spooky and mysterious. You can certainly see this in the depiction of the ultra demons, who have this kind of literally featureless face, which gives them a sort of enigmatic appearance. And I think it also applies to the Arcana demons, and to some extent to Charon and the Charona demons. This idea that they represent a kind of secretive approach, right? And the Arcana demons similarly are sort of stockpiling magic and magical power, learning and influence within their iron forts. But again, what do they get out of it? I mean, you could say that about the pursuit of magic in many people, and I think the Arcana demons are just an exaggerated version of that. Now, the role that these creatures fulfill in a campaign is, pretty versatile. You know, I've talked about how philosophically they can be quite unsatisfying. You have to put in a little extra effort to make them work in a way that you don't for demons and devils. We know what demons and devils do when they appear on the prime material plane. The devil tries to get some goof to sell his soul to them in exchange for, you know, unlimited power or whatever, and demons are summoned up by crazed cultists to murder and maraud and cover all the lands in a second darkness. By contrast, I think you're typically going to see demons with an A on the prime material plane as agents. You know, in their role as mercenaries or whatever, they're probably not going to have a distinct agenda of their own. Instead, their powers are going to be put to use by not cults, right? I don't think they're summoned by people who worship them, but by people who think that by appealing to the demon's greedy nature or otherwise self-interested nature, they can compel it to do something for them. So you might see the same, you know, Arcana demon sorcerer or Yagno demon guard or whatever in multiple situations because they're not committed to some evil cause. They're just working for somebody. And I suppose this also means that if you have PCs who are willing to get into this kind of moral gray area, you can deal with them a little bit differently. You know, you can maybe appeal to their self-interest. You know, Yagno demons aren't fanatical, I wouldn't think. Maybe when it's beating the tar out of you with its Tolkendar, you can say, listen, hey, you know, however much this guy is paying you, I'll double it. And it might, in fact, listen to you. But this does mean that within the context of designing a scenario, they are a bit more versatile and they have a tendency to point back toward a greater villain, right? Now, that greater villain may be a poor deluded fool who isn't aware that the Arcana demon that he summoned to teach him foul magics is, in fact, taking him for a ride. But still, it means that they fit into kind of henchman hierarchies quite effectively. The only problem with that is that it's sort of so do demons and devils, because binding them is something that we can expect evil sorcerers or evil high priests to be able to do, right? So this could be a distinctive feature of the demons with an A, but it happens so often with other ones that I don't know that it makes a big difference. But that's where I see them. I see them as, you know, it's kind of definitely how they're depicted in later editions, and I think that, you know, people looked at them and went, what do we do with them, and came to the same conclusion that we have, which is, you know, they work as mercenaries and free agents, and I think maybe, you know, if they have a kind of evil aesthetic, it's about self-interest and the futility of selfishness, as opposed to the chaos and terror of demons with no A, or the tyranny and oppression of devils. You can see this a little bit in the later elaboration of Anthraxis. I mean, he appears in later AD&D products, not to the same extent that, you know, Demogorgon or Asmodeus or Orcus or whoever do, but he does. And there, I think he eventually loses his throne and then regains it, but when he loses his throne, one of the things that he does is he kind of works as an agent for other powers, including those that don't have the same alignment as him. So clearly he's not, you know, sticking to principle. He's a self-interested dirtbag, and self-interested dirtbags do whatever it takes to survive. You could argue that this is actually the most interesting position morally to take relative to a typical party of Dungeons & Dragons characters, because you're almost never going to get a party of characters that contains a lot of, like, brutal imposers of order or, you know, mad terrorists who want to subvert the sense of normality in daily life. But you might very well get a party that contains a number of self-interested dirtbags who'll do whatever it takes to survive. And so under those circumstances, I guess these creatures could work as moral mirrors if you were willing to accept a big bat-eared lizard guy as your moral mirror, which I think many people would not. But yeah, that's demons with an A. You can see why they changed them to Yuggoloths, and you can see why they've never completely caught on in the same way as the other types of inhabitants of the lower planes. But if you look at them, I think that there is actually some interesting stuff there, and I think that there are ways that they can be put to use in a D&D game. So Noah, I hope that you enjoyed your episode. As I said before, if you'd like to be like Noah, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Keep joining us throughout the month as we continue the Monster Man holiday boss rush of special episodes and our regularly scheduled journey through Monster Manual 2 on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thanks for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.